Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. Today is Monday, January 11th, and we're back at you. Hi, Kelsey.
Hi.
Kelsey's back, and we're back.
Yes.
Last week, I only managed to get a co-host for just one day, so that was fun. The guest never called in.
Oh,
we
no.
We tried to call him, and we got into voicemail and stuff, so that was a whole thing. But we had a nice conversation. I had Sheena Middle here, and we'll have her on the show sometime when you're here.
Oh, great.
She's a lot of fun, you know. She does a show here every day, and she's definitely a lot of fun, you know.
Yes.
She had Patrick Duffy on the show. You know who he is?
He used
to be on Dallas. That was before your time. There was a series called Dallas, and it was like the biggest thing ever in the 80s. And so he was like a big deal and stuff. So
oh, wow.
He came here and stuff. So every time we get big celebrities, it's fun.
That is awesome. Well, I'm so glad to be back.
Yeah, well, great. So you went to the CES show in Vegas.
I did.
And what did you do there?
Well, I was working for a production company called From the Ground Up, and they're contracted by Qualcomm to hire spokespeople for the convention. So I was hired by From the Ground Up and worked for Qualcomm there. And so, yeah, it was great.
Really?
I had such
a good
time.
So you were like a spokesperson there. How cool is that?
Exactly. And, you know, I worked their smart home because we each had, you know, separate little demos to work. And so that was really, really cool. We had so much awesome technology. There was a robot in there.
Really?
Yeah, there was a Kika robot that had autonomous navigation and like a built-in projector. I know so much about technology now.
Whoa, there you go. I never thought
I would know because I had to learn all of these scripts and talk very candidly about it. So
that's great. So you learned something in the process too.
Definitely.
Wow. And then I blew you away with some new technology this morning with some virtual reality. And we'll talk a few minutes about that in a few minutes. But wasn't that something?
Isn't that cool? It is so neat. And you know what's funny is that's actually one of the huge draws of CES this year was the virtual reality and the wearables and drones and stuff. Right. You know, it's a shame because I actually didn't really get to walk around and explore.
You were busy.
I was working the whole time, and it was hard work. It was lots of standing and you know, talking for
probably just saying the same things over and over to people.
Exactly. It was rinse, wash, repeat a lot. Yeah. So, it was. But, you know, it was fun. It was a good experience. And it was something that, you know, once in a lifetime kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you get to go there. And I always like conventions and stuff. There's a good vibe about it, you know. Most conventions, I guess.
High energy. Lots of high energy. And,
you
know, techies everywhere, really innovative, entrepreneurial people. So that's nice. And I got to present to the Prime Minister of Taiwan, which
was a lot of really
high-powered CEOs and executives and government officials came through. So it was
very interesting.
Right. So that was really, really fun. And I hope you guys follow me on Instagram. I posted a few selfies and stuff like that, but I wasn't able to post anything with the logo. So I didn't do that, but it was lots of fun.
Yeah. So did you get, like in the evenings, did you get to see Vegas at all? Or you were probably so tired, huh?
Oh my gosh.
Tired.
One night, I mustered the energy to go out, and I was staying at the Mandalay Bay, so I ended up going to the House of Blues with a friend of mine, and, you know, we just had dinner and listened to some music and caught up. But, yeah, it was kind of one of those whirlwind things, and it was so funny because my coworkers and I, we would leave the hotel every morning and have these grand plans for the night, and then our ambitions would waver by the time 6 o'clock rolled around and we were getting off work. And so the plan usually changed, and we decided to just grab some food to go and go to our room. And
sounds like
bed.
Makes a lot more fun. You know? I mean, a lot more sense to do
that. Yes, it was kind of a pity to leave, actually, without having really gotten to explore a lot. I mean, I've been to Vegas before, but still, it's kind of a different experience every time. And I wanted to kind of see a show or something. I've heard the Michael Jackson show is like amazing. And so I wanted to do that, but I didn't get to. I'll have to go back when I'm not working so hard.
Yeah, there you go, you know. But it's a good feeling when you go to Vegas and you actually make money rather than lose money, you know.
Isn't that true?
Yeah. You know, I was just, in fact, I had a little article lined up here about Nevada casinos being hit by massive losses.
Really?
And you wonder, you know, I mean, the thing is, we know they make so much money from the gambling. But apparently what they're saying is, although people are spending money in restaurants and shows and stuff, their, I guess, gambling revenues are way down.
Oh,
people are not
really
playing as much, So, yeah, if they relied on people like me, they'd go out of business, man.
Oh, I'm not a gambler either.
Yeah, huh? I know. It's like I always felt I worked too hard for the money. I can't just leave it there, you know?
I agree. And you know as well as I do, every day is a gamble in the entertainment biz. So, so there's no need to go to a casino.
You're tired of gambling, right?
Yeah, no need to go to a casino to get that rush.
So, yeah, so that's casinos for you. And you know, I used to live in Vegas, and thank goodness I didn't like gambling because I would have gone broke there a long time ago.
I know. You know, it was so funny because we had to go to work or meet down in the lobby every day at about 7:15. And I kid you not, every day, without fail, we would run into people that had yet to go home.
Really?
Yes, they were drunk and, wow, you know, just having a good old time.
Yeah.
So
that's funny.
Yeah, it was interesting to be there on the premise of work as opposed to play.
Yeah, I know. Well, sometimes it stays with you, you know, till the following day.
Isn't that true? I know. Yeah. We were like, oh, goodness. But we really couldn't do much in the evening because just to function at 100% all day and give it our all for, you know, 12 hours straight was pretty grueling.
Yeah, so can't do it. I know. I used to go to the show every year, but then I realized it's too crowded. It's too tiring for me. And it's too big. And what happens is that if you don't really plan it, then you're walking around a lot of stuff that doesn't really interest you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you realize all the stuff I wanted to see, I never got around to seeing. So that's my problem with that convention. So,
well, it's absolutely huge.
It is.
And, you know, direction was a bit of an issue for me. I mean, I don't think I learned how to get from the Qualcomm booth to the food court in the most efficient way until the very last day.
Really?
I mean, I would find myself turning the wrong way and getting completely lost.
Wow.
And then just finding the bus stop. And even the hotel, the Mandalay Bay, is huge.
Yeah.
I don't ever remember any other hotel being that large and just kind of confusing, because the Delano is you know, right next to the Mandalay Bay, and they're connected via an not underground but a covered you know, tunnel or whatever. So it's, we would get dropped off at the Delano and then have to find our way back to the Mandalay Bay and all the rest. So I finally kind of learned my way around and felt more comfortable by Friday or Saturday when we were leaving, but then it was too late.
Wow. So in a few minutes, we're going to be talking to a guest on the phone. We're going to be talking about sex addiction, and he's written a book, and I thought that sounded very interesting, you know, because, I mean, I've heard of the term before, but I want to see if it really exists. Like, what makes it an addiction, you know?
Right.
Because a lot of people like sex a lot, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not like, so I don't know what makes it an addiction, but we'll find out.
Yes, we will. Yeah. I'm really interested to talk to him as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think really anything that you enjoy has the potential to become an addiction.
I guess when you overdo something.
Well, when you have that addictive type personality and that genetic makeup, you know, drugs are obviously, it can be addicting because they increase the, you know, endorphins and serotonin in your brain. So that pleasure seeking is addicting.
That's true. And it's probably like the same chemicals being released as gambling or something.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We're just speculating, but we'll talk to
the expert.
So I'm like really excited about this little toy I bought, and I showed you a little bit of this. For those of you who don't know what virtual reality is, it really like immerses you in whatever you're looking at, and you need special glasses for it. But what happened now is, you know, I mean, this stuff used to be expensive and everything, and mm-hmm. not everybody was able to use it. But now Google came out with what they call Google Cardboard VR, and you can buy it for like $12, and it works with your phone. So you find like apps on the phone and all kinds of like experiences that you can find. You put it in the viewer. And it immerses you, right?
Yes,
and
I'm still not sure exactly how it works.
Right. Well, let me explain it to you. But the thing is that what you saw was a little a recording of SNL, Saturday Night Live, in New York. And it was all recorded live. And what it is like you put the goggles on and You can look around and you see everything. You see the audience, you see the director, you see the photographers, you see everything as though you're behind the scenes. And you know, the amazing thing about this is the reason it's different from anything else we see, because usually you watch TV or a movie or something, you're seeing what the camera wants you to see.
Right.
And here you're standing and you can look at whatever you want. I mean, I was looking in the audience and this woman had a really nice cleavage. So I was looking at her and then I thought, have people seen me looking at her? And
oh
then
my
I realized
gosh.
I'm in virtual reality. But it's so funny, you know, because you can look at things and you can look around and up and down. And the way they do it, Kelsey, is the way they do the street views that Google does, they have a little contraption with cameras all around. It's like 360-degree cameras.
I see. Okay, I figured.
So there's a lot of cameras there.
Right.
And they all capture it at the same time. But how they put it, seamlessly put it together is amazing to me. But yeah, and it's real and it's moving. It's not just still images. I mean, after that, I'll show you like a little video of U2. And I mean, I'm not crazy about U2, but the video is something amazing. You're going to be sitting so close to them. It's like you can touch them.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Wow. Here comes our guest now. So let's go ahead and take this. And I believe we have Robert Weiss on the line. Robert, are you with us?
That'd be me.
Yes. Thank you for calling, Robert. How are you doing this morning?
I am great, thank you. How are you?
Great.
We're good. Welcome to the show.
I'm sitting here with Kelsey. So
thanks, guys.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you for calling in. You're in sunny Southern California. And is this where you live or are you visiting? Are you on a book tour? What are you doing these
days?
No,
I'm a Santa Monica guy. I live in California. I'm a city boy. Half my life in New York City and half my life in Los Angeles. And I like the warm weather.
Oh, cool. So you're initially from the East Coast then?
Yes, sir.
Oh,
and I'm going to ask, are we live or are we going to be?
No, we're live right now. You're
okay,
on the
good.
Show. Yeah, you're on the
well,
show.
We got stuff to talk about.
Exactly. We don't play around. You know,
surprise, you're live.
No yeah. screening calls and preparing you or anything. You're on your own. But Robert, you just wrote a book. Is this book recent?
I've written probably 6 books along the way about problems with internet sexuality, addictive sexuality. I was fairly popular in the early Clinton administration.
Uh-huh.
When I got lots of phone calls, my area of expertise has been addictive and compulsive sexuality, intimacy disorders in adults.
Mm.
Not offending, but more like multiple affairs or somebody who's looking at too much porn. And then everything in my work kind of blew up when the internet blew up in the late 90s, and I started writing about it. So I just finished my fourth or fifth, or I don't know, I write about this a lot, book on sex addiction called Sex Addiction 101.
Right.
And that's what I think you're asking about.
Yeah, exactly. Sex Addiction 101, a basic guide to healing from sex, porn, and love addiction. So let's pretty much break this down. Tell us what sex addiction is so everybody's on the same page.
You know what? It's better to start me than I tell you what sex addiction isn't. I think that might be better, and then we'll tell you what it is. I'll tell you what it isn't. It isn't
okay.
A guy who's who's having an affair and gets caught and says, oops, I must be a sex addict.
Okay.
It isn't somebody who doesn't want to be into something that turns them on. Let's say they don't want to be homosexual or they don't want to be into some kind of kinky whatever, but that's what turns them on. And they say, oh, well, that must be sex addiction because I don't like it and I don't want it. Mm. That's not sex addiction. I would say sex addiction is not fun. You know, sex is fun, but sex addiction, not so much. The way I think about it is kind of like alcohol is fun and drinking is fun for most people, but alcoholism, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the same with sex addiction. So what is it? It is an emotional disorder where people turn to the excitement of flirtation and arousal and sexuality as a distraction from emotional pain.
Mm.
So yeah. While most of us turn to sex to procreate or to recreate, or even occasionally just to soothe ourselves, I work with people who really go to sex for to the search for sex for its secondary gain, which as a huge distraction, a time suck, a way for them to be emotionally distracted because they are unable to deal with the other issues that are going on in their lives. They don't have the emotional skill sets for it. And so they turn to sex, just like some people turn to gambling or drugs or other mm-hmm. distractions, other hyperstimulations, as a means of comforting themselves and getting through the day.
Right. So it's really how you approach this and what you use it for, right? In other words, you know, if you're using sex for intimacy or to connect with people or whatever, that's normal behavior. But you're saying if it starts to distract your life and ruin your life, then it's a problem.
Well said, because what we define, you know, if you think about alcoholism, you know, we don't say, well, the person who has two drinks tonight is an alcoholic, but the person is not an alcoholic, but the person who has three drinks tonight is, you know?
Right.
So we don't say the person who has sex twice a week is not a sex addict, but the person who has five times a week sex is, because we don't define it by how often you're sexual, and in the same way, we don't define it by what kind of sex you have. So just like you don't define alcoholism by what, you know, do you abuse wine or do you abuse whiskey? You know, we don't say, well, are you into men or into women or into whatever? We say, you know, is your sexual behavior really taking over your life and your pursuit of sex to the point where you're not present for your family, you're looking at porn at work, you're not dating because you're so caught up in what's going on online. So you put it really well. It's when the functionality of your life, the way it should be going, is negatively affecting by all the search and obsession you have around sexual behavior and romantic behavior.
So. Wow. So what you're saying is just loving sex is not it's not an addiction. It's not a disorder.
Because, I hope not.
Right, exactly. Because
we'd all be emotionally.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. But you know, some people love to have a glass of wine at the end of the day. Some people love a couple of drinks and they go out with friends.
Right.
And they feel more comfortable and they laugh more. And that's a lot of fun, but that doesn't make them alcoholic.
Right, exactly.
You know, some people love to go to the casino once in a while and play with the slot machines or go play blackjack twice a year, and it's a social evening, but they're going there to have fun. They're not going there to lose themselves.
Right. Mm.
But the person who goes gambling night after night after night because they're, you know, doing it to escape some kind of emotional reality, that person is more likely to be a compulsive gambler.
Right.
And it isn't any different with the people I work with, because it isn't really so much about the sex, it's more about pursuing it. The people I work with are already high by the time they've gotten someone's card, or they have that glance across a room, or they drove by the massage parlor twice. You know, they've already got their heart pounding, their pupils dilated, already in an emotional kind of high, arousal, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's the goal. The goal is to lose themselves in the excitement around the possibilities. The sex mm-hmm. itself is kind of secondary, to be honest.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Very interesting, you see, because I didn't think about it that way, because I know that that men, and specifically me, think about sex quite a bit, you know, but I don't see that it interferes with my life. It's just sort of like, it just happens, you know.
And that sounds very healthy. I think men think about sex very often, but thinking about it to the point where you're allowing yourself to become aroused,
right,
and you're allowing yourself to think about things like, oh, well, maybe I'll just leave work a little early, or maybe I won't make that appointment with my friends, or, you know, where it becomes not only a thought, but it becomes the driving thought,
wow,
or the obsession,
yeah,
or it is what you base your choices on. Yes, I'll be home to take care of my kids, but first I'm going to stop off here.
Mm.
You know, that kind of, then that's when it becomes a problem.
Right. Now, so you mentioned,
and it's not fun anymore, by the way.
Yeah, I guess not, because you sort of like probably develop a tolerance for it or something, you know.
Well, I don't even. There's certainly some tolerance, and that means that people might find themselves, let's say, looking at porn twice a week, and then they're looking three times, and then looking an hour a night, and then they're looking 2 hours a night. So it's kind of like drug escalation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you think about it, you know, you know, it's funny to me that people say, oh, well, if sex could be an addiction, anything could be an addiction. You know, what is it going to be next? You know, and I understand that, but the reality is, in order for something to be an addiction, it has to be highly pleasurable and highly distracting.
Right.
So, does playing with your dog an addiction? You know, probably not. I mean, it's fun. It's wonderful. I love playing with my dog, but it's not that intense or powerful.
Right.
Is looking at porn addictive? Well, yeah, because sex is one of the most powerfully pleasurable things we can experience. And if you can learn how to manipulate your own emotional life so that every time you feel bad, you just flick on some porn and you start to feel better,
right.
Because you don't have the means or other ways to make yourself feel better, then that can be a pretty powerful thing to go back to over and over and over again.
So they probably develop kind of like a love-hate relationship with the addiction.
I'm really, you know, I'm glad you said that. And by the way, I'm glad you're a woman because, and there's a woman on the show because about a quarter of the people I see are female.
Oh, wow.
And it would be very easy for people to think, oh, this is a guy thing.
Right. And I was going to say
that's
that.
That's one of my... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, but I was going to say that because, you know, you talk about porn, and porn is very specifically a male thing. And, yeah, and then you wonder about women and stuff, but I see you also cover love addiction, and I would imagine maybe that's a little more frequent among women than sex addiction, or would you say that?
Well, I think of when I really understand love addiction, what it is, and I'll tell you exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Sex addiction is using people as objects.
Right.
To feel better about yourself or to improve your mood. You don't really care about them, whether it's an affair or a prostitute or a porn. You know, you don't have no... It's all about you.
Right.
Words.
Right.
And so love addiction is really just a step up. It's using other people as love objects.
Mm.
So the fact that the person likes me, loves me, appreciates me, that makes me feel better about myself. That makes me feel stable. That makes me feel good. But I'm not really that interested in who they are or what's going on with them because I'm kind of using them like I would use a drug or go to the casino. And you can use a person like that and you can use body parts like that.
Yeah.
So women who have these issues will tend to more objectify the romance, the relationship. Although I have tons of women who are having a lot. I mean, I have worked with women who, you know, they can't let the UPS guy in the house because they'll have sex with him.
Oh, wow.
And that sounds like really funny, and ooh, what guy wouldn't want to run into that? But when you look into that woman's history, you know, she was molested as a child. She had to deal with rape, or she watched her dad having an affair in front of her eyes. You know, these are the kinds of damage that the people I work with walk around in the world with.
Yeah.
And the way they manage it is not by turning to a friend, going for a walk. When they're having a bad day, they start thinking about getting aroused.
Right.
And it's really where it comes from is really a lot of childhood and early deficits in terms of relationship and intimacy, emotion.
Right.
The people I work with, they want to be in a relationship. They want to love. They want to feel connected. They want to feel a part of it. They want all the things we want. It's just that they are terrified of them.
Right.
That, you know, growing up with abuse or violation or the inability to connect means that trying to do so is scary. And so in a way, what sex addicts and love addicts do is they're trying to approximate what the rest of us do. They're trying to get love, appreciation, affection, validation. They want to feel important, especially to someone, but they don't want to risk that person might hurt them or let them down or harm them in other ways. So they choose situations that are anonymous or casual or really intense so that they don't ever have to, again, kind of be let down or hurt like they were when they were younger.
Right. Mm. And I think it's important to make the distinction between wanting to have a lot of sex and having an addiction. I mean, it's totally different things because of the way you approach it, of the needs that it satisfies for you and things like this. And I think this is like as tricky as like food addiction and food disorders because it's stuff that's like normal and sometimes it's hard to know you're actually addicted to it.
You know, I'm really glad you said that because, you know, in the way it looks in the world, like the way you would if you were measuring a blood a sex addict's blood pressure as they were cruising or something, sex addiction looks a lot like compulsive gambling. You know, the person, it's about intensity and excitement, just like the winning or the losing. The orgasm is kind of like winning or losing, or picking up the person is kind of like the winning or losing. Right. But the whole addiction is also involves, you know, going to the casino, looking at the cards, getting the money, cashing your check. And so for the people I work with, you know, they don't have to have sex to be lost and to be high for days. You know, they can be looking at images, calling people up, checking out websites, cruising by different areas. But what you say is really important, because sex is a naturally occurring function.
Right.
So, you know, sobriety when you're an alcoholic is not drinking and not using and no mood-altering substances, period. And you can live a perfectly happy life if you never have another drink. You might miss it, but it's not like, and that's not essential to healthy living.
Exactly.
It's a bonus. Yeah. It's a plus. Yeah. But when you get to eating or sex, that's, you know, that's when sex addiction is more like an eating disorder, when you look at helping people, because I don't want people to stop being sexual. I just want them to find ways to be sexual that don't involve losing family, getting diseases, losing jobs, getting arrested, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah, and that's important, you know, because I guess, and I can imagine how this ruins a lot of relationships too, you know, because, like you said, I think you start doing crazy things to get what you need, to get your fix, you know.
Right. You know, what we all need.
Yeah.
Healthy people get it from friends and family and community and work. People who have the kinds of issues that I have, they don't trust those. I mean, they're like, you know, many of a client, if they have a boss who says, you did a great job, or a girlfriend who says, wow, I really care about you, the first thing my folks think is, well, what do you want from me? You know, they can't really take that in. They're suspicious. They're uncomfortable. They're fearful of intimacy and close connection as much. And you think, wow, these people having sex, what could be closer and more intimate? But their sex is not intimate.
Yeah.
Right.
Their sex is in situations that are objectified, where they don't really care that much about the person, or they say they care intensely, but they're also married and also sleeping with someone else. So how much do they really care?
Yeah.
Right.
That's true. That's
people come into treatment when they're having consequences. So, you know, nobody comes into treatment, and I've been doing this for 20, almost 30 years before the internet even showed up. The guys who I worked with in the beginning were the old-fashioned phone sex people, where the phone was plugged into the wall, and
you
get charged $3 a minute to talk to some woman on the phone, you know, and my guys would come in with $5,000, $6,000, and $8,000 phone sex bills.
Wow.
And they would pay them off, and 3 weeks later, they'd have another $5,000 bill, or they'd go to their friend's house and use their phone, or their mother's house and use their phone. So they were obsessed.
Wow.
Or I'd have other people with, you know, storehouses, literally like storage wars, you know, like a room full of porn, a garage
full
of porn.
Oh, my gosh.
Or 15 affairs, you know. I mean, so the people that I work with have a lifetime commitment to, you know, soothing themselves through the pursuit of of sexual high.
Right. And I guess it's like it's never enough, huh? You always need more and more. I mean, if you need so much space for your porn and everything, that's pretty
worrisome. Well, you know, we want things that are new. You know, you talk about men versus women. Men love new stimulation.
Right.
That's why we like porn. We are very visual.
Right.
So, you know, we'll consume it. So if you think about in the old days, you know, you bought a magazine and a video. There were only so many images in that magazine or video. And half the time, by the way, you had to rent them because they were expensive.
Right.
Now, how easy is it to get as much porn? You know, now porn viewing is kind of now like gambling. In the sense that, you know, when you sit down at the table, it's card after card after card. They never end. And so, you know, and what addicts really get hooked on is not so much what's in front of them, but what is to come. Part of their, and this is a brain disorder. I mean, this addiction is a brain disorder. We see the problems in the brain. And one of the major problems in the brain for those people who have these kinds of addictions is that they get caught up in the anticipation of what might be on the way, of the big gambling win, of the perfect sexual experience. They're not actually in the moment.
Right.
They're in the next hand of cards and the hand after that. So when porn went online, it went from being something that you had a few images that go out and get some more, it took time, you know, to being something that was never ending, much like that hand of cards at the casino. So now you can lose yourself in porn for hours and hours and hours and hours. You don't need to fill up a garage, and you don't need to go to a porn shop.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Part of what the internet has done is it's driven the ease of access to content and to people in a way that those people who have problems and challenges are just getting in more trouble faster.
That's true, and nobody knows about it. You know, it's like, it sounds like such a lonely thing, you know?
Right. So how does one go about starting to heal or, you know, recover from something like that?
You know, I think the first key key to any kind of recovery of either emotional issue, mental health issue, physical health, is first of all getting into reality. You know, it's like, wow, what have I been doing? How often have I been doing it? You know, finding someone maybe neutral to go through that history with and have them say, you know, that sounds a little crazy. Really, even writing down your sexual... In other words, in order to address something, you have to be convinced that there's a reason to address it. And a lot of my clients come in, and this is really sad, and they say, I thought I was crazy. I thought I was just depressed. You know, I didn't realize that masturbating 5 times a day for 3 hours to porn was my problem. You know, it never occurred to me. I just thought that was what other guys did. Or I just thought that going out to the bar and picking up a guy 3 nights a week and then being on Match.com hours a day is what every woman does. I mean, the people I come in with, come in to see me are very isolated. And they also, and because sexists are shameful, you know, they feel like they're the only one and they're perverts and they have so much shame and self-hatred. And then on top of that, they've been lying and they've been keeping secrets and they've been living a double life. And so all that crap has to be cleared away.
Right.
And we have to give them some sense of themselves as being a good person, that they're a good person, that they didn't do these things because they don't care about their wife. You know, it's so funny when it's so sad to me that so many of my clients who are married or in committed relationships, straight or gay, mm-hmm. often have the love that would be available to them that they actually really want and long for right in front of them, but they don't allow themselves to take it because it's too scary. It's easier for them to go downtown and pick up a prostitute at 3 in the morning than it would be to sit down with their spouse and say, you know, I'm not happy with something going on in our relationship. That's scary.
Wow.
So... Yeah. Working on the problem is really beginning to identify the parts of sexuality that are problematic. We'll sit down and say, well, what's your whole sex life been? And what parts of it have led you to arrest or disease or losing relationships? And what parts of it have been good for you and healthy? And we'll contract with that person. And that is what you do with eating disorders. Yeah. You don't say to someone, you're not going to eat anymore. You say, what kind of eating has been problematic for you? Oh, sugar. Okay. Oh, okay. Eating between meals. So you need to only eat at mealtime and once, you know, 3 times a day or whatever that is. And you set rules with people around their behavior. And as long as they maintain those rules, they're sober. And so you can be a sex addict and be sober and still be sexual, but not in certain ways. You can be an eating disorder person and be sober, and eat, of course, but you're not eating like in the gluttonous ways you did before.
Right.
And that, when people are able to maintain those kind of agreements, they start growing self-esteem, they start feeling better about themselves, they start feeling hopeful. And, of course, that has its own, you know, its own, like, rhythm to it when people start feeling better about themselves.
Yeah. That, I mean, this is fascinating, you know, because like I said, you know, I think most people don't realize that there could be such a thing as sex addiction because they don't realize the consequences of this kind of behavior, you know. And like you said, you risk an arrest or losing your relationship or whatever it is, you know, losing your respect. I mean, you know, look at all these like celebrities and politicians and stuff that get themselves in trouble for all these sexual innuendos and whatever it is that they do. And you go, how can somebody like this put their career on the line? You know, like Anthony Weiner, for example.
Yeah, but unfortunate name.
Yeah, you know, so I think that probably has something to do with it.
He's such a great example, and I don't know the man. I don't know if he's a sex addict or not. Right. And honestly, my greatest fault with Anthony Weiner is he doesn't understand technology, because who would put their penis on Twitter?
Yeah, exactly.
I know.
But that aside, you know, that's a good example, because when you see somebody who's got an 8-month pregnant wife, who is a member of Congress, right. and a public figure, put everything at risk for what, you know? And that's right. When I get called, by the way. You know, that's when the media will call someone like me and they'll say, gee, you know, he's a really attractive man, he could have anybody he wants, you know, why, you know, he's wealthy, blah, 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 why would he do something like this, whoever he is?
Right.
And, you know, he could get anyone he wants. Well, it's, you know, I have worked with, and I, you know, say this pretty, I live in Hollywood, as you mentioned, or that part of the world. I've worked with men who are married to some of the most beautiful women on a sort of, as you would consider, you know, magazines and all of that, in the world. And they're out, you know, picking up prostitutes. And it's like, what are, you know, don't you have an alpha? Like, don't you have a better, you have the lady that everybody in the world wants, or whatever that is.
Right.
But that isn't what it's about. This isn't about beauty or body parts, or, you know, it's really about just losing yourself. Yeah. And you know, when that famous person is under stress and they're separated from their family and they're not getting support and they're working 18-hour days and they're probably already emotionally vulnerable, they're going to turn to a quick fix.
Right.
And that quick fix is going to be the thing that's going to make them feel better for a little while, long enough to get through whatever it is they're doing, and they go home with a smile on their face like everything's fine.
Yeah. Well, we're talking to Robert Weiss. The book is Sex Addiction 101, A Basic Guide to Healing from Sex, Porn, and Love Addiction. I guess you guys can find it, right, at bookstores and everything, Robert?
Well, my books are on Amazon.
Okay.
I work and create treatment centers, so there's places where I actually evolve treatment, both for men and women. We have a wonderful treatment center in Tennessee called The Ranch.
Oh, nice.
And you can also look at robertweissmsw.com, msw.com, and that is my website. And I have all kinds of nonprofit, you know, support groups and books and information. And the first key is learning, you know, learning I'm not a bad person, learning I do love my spouse, learning that it can get better.
Right.
And then starting
to figure out. Ultimately, it's a disease, really. I mean, it's not.
It's a brain disease, actually.
Yeah.
Wow.
We were right all along, you know, when the 30s, they said, yeah, alcoholism, I think it's a brain disease. You know, it is a brain disease. It is a disease where the person uses the idea and the fantasy about what they might get or what is to come as a source of distraction. Do I have a quick second? I'd love to give you an example.
Yeah,
sure.
Quickly, yes, please.
So I just want you to think about in completely different terms. I want you to think about, let's say we had a friend who was a drug addict and he found out he was going to get paid, you know, and he thought, oh, great, you know, I'm going to get paid, so I'm going to call my dealer and see if I can get some drugs. And the dealer says, oh, yeah, I got some drugs. Come on down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he runs to work. He gets his paycheck. He cashes the paycheck. He's got the money in his pocket. He's racing downtown in his car. You know, he's got the music blaring. He gets there. You know, so he goes all the way through to the point, let's say, where he's sitting with a dealer and the dealer says, hey, you're such a cool client. I'm going to give you a bowl of whatever it is your drug is, and I'm going to get you high. You don't even have to pay me. So he, you know, gets the bowl and he inhales. At what point would you say in the scenario I just described, is this man high? At what point is he making bad decisions for himself? At what point is he into hyper-excitement? At what point do you see his pupils dilating, his hands getting clammy, his hearing getting murky? In other words, at what point is he in a different state of consciousness? Is it only once he's inhaled that drug? And any audience that I've ever worked with are like, oh, my God, no, he was high the minute that guy told him he was going to get paid that day. And that's when he started getting excited about, oh, well, I get the drugs and this and that. And then there are neurochemical changes. He has more adrenaline pumping and endorphins, and he's starting to feel differently, and he's getting all excited. That is the goal, is to be lost in that space.
I see. So it's the process.
If you think about it, a drug addict is actually high long before he or she has the drugs in their body.
Mm-hmm.
Because the excitement of and the anticipation of is what leads them to literally make bad decisions, thinking.
Yeah.
Well, that's the goal of every gambler and sex addict, is to be in that state of, I can't wait till it happens, and who's it going to be, and heart pounding, and who is it, and when, and where. That's really what the goal is, just lose yourself in all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. True. True. Very true. And it all makes a lot of sense. And really, it's how it's affecting your life. And if you're having problems because of sex, you probably should check it out. Reach out for someone like Robert Weiss. The website is robertweissmsw.com, and you guys can find out more information. The book is Sex Addiction 101, and you guys can find it everywhere books are sold. And Robert, thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. It was really enlightening.
Yeah, we're going to talk about, I got a book coming out on cheating and how men can find their way back to their relationships, and we'll be talking next year when that comes out.
Sounds great, man. So just contact us when it comes out. We'll have you back.
I look forward to it.
Okay, thank you, Robert. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, guys. Be well.
Okay, bye. So, I guess you can always have problems, you know.
Very eloquently said.
Yeah, you know, what can I say, you know?
I know, it's sad.
Yeah, people have so many problems, you know, and I think a lot of it comes, you know, and he mentioned that from childhood and everything, you know, I think
some of it's just genetic, the genetic makeup of your brain. I mean,
probably.
I'm no expert, no doctor, but I've read studies and things where they say that, you know, so, genetic predisposition is so you know, critical when it comes to healing and everything like that. So many people who are genetically predisposed will have the disease.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes it's just the hand of cards you're dealt.
There you go, you see.
But, you know, it doesn't mean that you can't get help and you can't heal and recover. So,
yeah, it's just that it's going to be tough and it's going to be a problem, you know. And it's hard sometimes to realize how sex or love can be a problem. But we just got a whole lesson on that. And
but there is hope. There is definitely hope. So don't ever think that there is not hope. That's the worst part, I think.
Exactly. And I think you really have to be careful of disease and things like that. That, you know, because you don't know who you're with, you know.
There are so many consequences to really everything. I mean, if you think about it, you know, sex addiction, obviously there's the potential to lose family, get arrested, get STDs. And with alcohol addiction, there's potential to, you know, have liver failure and die essentially from the effects of it. Yeah. So, yes, everything in excess can be a problem.
Exactly. And, you know, and I'm also thinking, you know, what if you're like, because obviously there's a lot of irresponsible behavior with this. So what if you start and fooling with a married woman or something, and then her husband pulls out a gun and kills you, you know? So you never know. And then he talked about illegal things, you know, like if maybe going to a hooker or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, with addictions, they say the only outcomes are, what did they say? Jail, institutions, or death. That's the end of addictions, usually.
Right.
And you can see that. You can totally see that, you know. So people do crazy things, and when we don't understand it, maybe that's the problem, you know. Maybe Bill Cosby, maybe that's his problem, you know.
Oh, I'm sure he has some sort of mental emotional disorder of some sort.
Yeah, I mean, you don't do that stuff to young women, like systematically.
No.
And be normal.
No.
Yeah.
It's obviously not a healthy behavior.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting to talk to him.
Yeah.
I loved what he had to say. It was really enlightening. I mean, especially for people who haven't suffered from an addiction.
Right. Yeah.
It's also very important, I think, for the loved ones of people with the disease to be aware and to be really supportive, and also just to realize that It's not them speaking. It's the disease. Right. They have a disease. I mean, it's no different than, you know, coming down with any other type of physical disease. It's a mental disease.
And yeah, especially like with dementia and things like that, where people don't do it because it's not their fault. It's the disease that's behaving like that.
Right. Now, I mean, it is their fault if they don't want to get treatment, I suppose, but the actual disease isn't their fault.
Yeah, that's true.
So
yeah.
I don't think.
Yeah.
So I think knowing that fact and that information can help you deal with a loved one who might be afflicted with it a little bit better.
Right, yeah.
Because I think so many people condemn and, you know, scold and everything, and look, they know they're not doing right. They know they're not, you know, behaving properly. They don't want to be doing what they're doing.
Right. They're probably suffering more than anybody else.
Yes, but they can't control it.
Right.
So I think once you kind of understand that fact, it becomes a little bit easier to manage.
Yeah, true. All right. Well, in other news, folks.
On a lighter note.
Yeah, on a lighter note. Have you been following the Powerball lottery?
Oh, I haven't. I should go buy a ticket, though.
Yeah, but I mean, who is like not talking about this? We're at $1.4 billion jackpot.
I know.
I mean, that's, you know, people go, well, how much money is that? Well, that's like 1,500 millions.
Yes.
Okay? You multiply million by 1,000. Okay, that's $1 billion.
Right.
So just imagine, I mean, it's like beyond comprehension what this type of wealth can bring.
I know, and what a difference like a day can make.
Right?
If you win the lottery.
Yeah, I mean, I know.
Oh, gosh, but have you, you know what, it's so funny. I love watching like Investigation Discovery and all those kinds of shows, and there's this one show, I forget the name of it, but it's called, I think it's called The Curse of the Lottery or something to that effect. And it's kind of ironic. Because you would think that getting that much money coming into wealth like that would be amazing and everything. But a lot of times people who acquire it in such a fashion aren't ready for it, don't know what to do with it, and it ends up destroying their lives.
Yeah.
If you look back at the history of lottery winners.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to look at.
They do say many of them like end up bankrupt and everything. You know, it's like, yeah, you're right. Because look, many people are just like regular people. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to handle money. I mean, I don't know that I would know how to handle $1 billion, you know.
I would even probably just leave million. It sitting there yeah. in the bank. I don't know, not touch it.
They're saying that if you put it in the bank, you'd be making, what did they say, $4 million a day.
Oh, can you imagine? My gosh.
That's if you just put it in the bank.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
I don't even know how you could spend enough of that to go bankrupt. You'd have to really try.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
To run out of that money.
I'm sure with an amount like that, you probably wouldn't go bankrupt, but
with any amount of responsibility at all, I don't think you would go bankrupt. But hey, stranger things have happened, I guess.
I know. How do you spend all that money? You know, so obviously you'd want to give some to charity and stuff.
Right. You know? That's just so much. I mean, yeah. Why would you even?
Yeah. But like I was thinking also, I posted this and it's like, I mean, what would you not do if you had that kind of money? I mean, there's nothing that stands in your way. You can fly to space if you want.
Right.
You know, you can have a flying car. You can have anything you possibly could want, you could have.
Yes. You know, my philosophy in life and how I've always looked at my career and everything is to think, if I won the lottery and I had just as much money as I could ever need, and, you know, my kids and grandkids and their grandkids could ever need, would I still keep working at my job?
Yeah.
That's when you know you love your job.
That's true.
And so that's how I've always kind of, you know, I haven't always loved my jobs that much. But that's what my standard has been.
Yeah.
Just loving it so much to where it's not about the money. And, you know, I think that that's really winning the lottery, right? If you can find something that you love that much. I mean, how many people are that lucky?
That's true. That's true. You're very lucky in that way. You know, there's a lot of people that have no reason to get up in the morning.
Yeah.
And that's a terrible thing to be.
But for me, you know, it's a lot of sacrifice. I'm away from my family in Texas.
That's true.
You know, I go back and see them a lot.
Yeah.
But there are times when I'm like, oh my gosh, is it worth it? Is the struggle and the... and everything worth it? If I make it big, it will be, but
yeah, exactly.
If not, the journey has been great nonetheless.
Exactly. And you know, making it big is relative, you know.
It's so relative. It's not about that. It's about doing what I love.
Exactly. And you can make it big without being an Angelina Jolie or something.
No. That's not what I mean. But still, you know, it's the thing where I think all actresses have this mindset. I mean, we just want to work.
Yeah.
Just working would make you happy. The fame and everything is so, I do not want that. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
I just want to work and get to practice what I love and my art and everything. So.
Good for you. You're very lucky in that way.
Thank you.
And finally, everybody's talking about David Bowie. David Bowie dying at 69.
Oh my gosh!
And that's very sad news. He was, I guess, fighting cancer for 15 years.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Mm. And no, I'm sorry. How can it be 15 years? No, 18 month battle.
Oh, okay.
I meant months, not years.
Okay, I was like, wow, yeah, that's a good run.
I mean, that's a long time to hide it, too. My God,
right?
But he was surrounded by family and friends, and they're not saying what kind of cancer. They're just saying that, you know. And the thing is with David Bowie is that everybody remembers him being very innovative, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's changed his looks so many times, the music. He's just been like a leader, you know, in rock and roll,
mm-hmm.
Always reinventing himself, I think, you know. And that's what's kept him a legend,
right.
You know. So we're going to miss him. I've been listening to some of his music, and it's really cool.
Oh.
And that's one thing about being a famous artist, though, man, is like you leave a legacy behind you, you know?
Right.
It's like you don't necessarily die. I mean, you leave everything. you know, still. So somehow I guess every person should try and do that in their own life, is leave a legacy whether you're famous or not.
That, right, exactly. Right? I mean, be what it may.
Yeah, exactly. And on that note, folks, we always try to encourage you and give you confidence and everything right here on this show. So stay with us for the rest of the week. We have a guest every day this week.
Yay.
And that's going to be fun. So,
and I'm back. Yes.
Yes, she's back.
So you have to listen.
Yes. And that's it. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Have a great week, you guys. Bye-bye.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.